So we'll start over here.
I think that it's very important for everyone to bring their petitions so that we can sign them. Like, for instance, he was talking about how he wants us to write letters to the Brazilian government. And I would be happy to write that letter, but I don't know the address. So if you could put out a petition. Also, the Maasai people. I think that the British government should be petitioned to return their lands, and they need to have DNA testing of the soldiers that raped the Subaru women. And if we are here to network, we must not only passively listen to speeches, we must actively do something. And we should also get each other's email addresses to send alerts and to be organized and together. And I thank all of you for your beautiful, wonderful, healing energy.
Is it okay if I speak in Portuguese, or my question is for Chief
Wilson? No, for whoever you like.
Okay. Eu só queria que o Wilson falasse como é que é a experiência das crianças que saem da escola na sexta série e vão para a escola normal, pro real world, e como é que é esse choque cultural que eles passam. Oh, sure. My question was for Chief Wilson. He was telling me that the kids go to school in the tribe till they are 12 years old. And then my question is, how do they react, or how is there, if there's any cultural shock when they go to the, like, regular school?
Sim. No meu tempo, né, como a minha mãe, ela teve pouco estudo, né? Ela não teve muita oportunidade, porque vivia mais isolado. Vivia mais isolado da civilização, assim, né? Porque a região ainda não era bem desenvolvida, né? Antes da Aracruz chegar até o local, né? Então a gente tinha um estudo até quarta série.
So in the times of my mother, for example, she didn't have any formal studies because at that time the Tupiniquim hadn't had much contact with outside society, so they were still, you know, until Aracruz came in, they were still living in their own ways and traditions.
E é mais ou menos, precisamente, 12 anos, criamos então a educação indígena. Né? Foi um trabalho feito junto com o Estado, governo do Espírito Santo, onde que foi formado professores indígenas para dar aula para os próprios indígenas. Como a história explicada no Brasil, fala sobre colonização e a história que vem de fora, nós implantamos a nossa sabedoria dos mais velhos.
So about 12 years ago we began building our own education and our own schools where our own people would train as teachers and teach in our own language, and also where, you know, in the Brazilian history books, it tells one story of colonization. And so we decided to, in our own language and our own traditions, to tell our own story, our own history to our children.
Atualmente, a gente ainda não tem até a sexta série. A gente precisa progredir, continuar formando até professores para que nós não possamos sair da aldeia para estudar, que nós tenhamos então só indígenas estudando a sua história e a sua cultura, coisa diferenciada, né, das outras escolas convencionais.
So in our community, for example, we only go up to about 16 years old, you know, about up to high school. So what we want to do is to continue that and continue education, including to have more of our own teachers and teaching in our own tradition so that people do not have to leave our communities in order to learn.
Bom, se respondi...
Se tu podia falar um pouco sobre o choque cultural, se existe, entre essas crianças que estão na escola na tribo e depois quando eles vão para a escola tradicional.
Sim.
Peraí, que eu traduzo. If he could talk more about if there is any kind of cultural shock between these kids that are in the tribe school and when they go to the traditional school.
Sim. Não só o choque cultural, mas também um certo tipo de racismo. Porque, às vezes, as outras crianças aprendem com os pais deles coisa diferente das nossas crianças. Então, se um índio vai para a escola de pintado, né? As outras crianças não entendem e tratam ele com diferença. E também os índios, o meio, né, o jeito de se portar é um pouco diferente das outras. Então, quando vai para o meio dos outros, fica tímido. E isso atrapalha também o rendimento escolar.
So yeah, there are problems, not only cultural issues, but also racism, where children from outside the community are taught by their parents certain things, and they're taught differently than we are. So they reflect what their parents teach them when they meet, you know, other children, indigenous children. So when we go to school painted, for example, they'll, you know, treat us with prejudice. They're also brought up in a different way than we are, and that creates differences so that when there are people, you know, when our kids go into school and are put into that situation, often they're very timid and shy. And so that's another impact that has on the children and also on their learning. And in response to your question, we have the letter here.
Uma carta, essa é uma carta com endereço e também dizer o que pedir do ministro.
Você tem muitas cópias?
Não, só tem essa.
So, I have just one copy of this letter. It has the address, but it also has, you know, our demands. It's a model letter, but I only have one. So why don't you go ahead and take it and you can take the address from it.
Okay, so let's move on to the next question.
If we can just have your help by asking one question, that way it provides an opportunity for other people to ask a question. So be very clear on your question, okay?
Hi, my question pertains directly to Joseph. You mentioned the use of the image of the Maasai in the promotion of safaris. And I specifically read a case of Aboriginal law that used intellectual property rights to protect this image. Is there any introduction of intellectual property rights to protect the image of the Maasai?
Thank you very much for the question. At the moment, we don't have any legislation in the country that we can use to protect our rights. There is an attempt or there is a process to rewrite a new constitution in Kenya. And actually last year, there was a referendum to adopt a new constitution. But then the country, the majority of the citizens rejected the constitution, the new constitution, through a referendum. And again, the process started again. And if, for example, we end up having, the new constitution maybe the coming year or the year after, and then we are going to have a legal mechanisms in which we demand or we stop those who are really using our images for commercial purposes. But at the moment, we really don't have much, really any legal mechanisms. But again, another way to look at it, really a high illiteracy among our people, whereby, you know, people who are well informed, well educated, can also go and get their signatures without really them knowing what they are signing. And that means even if you want to challenge, already people have already surrendered any rights to these multinational companies. So it's a bit really tricky scenario, and Kenya has not really, one, the law of awareness among the people, and people who are very sophisticated in manipulation are really taking advantage. But I think much or really not much can be done at the moment until a new legislation is in place that maybe people can use it. But at the moment, the situation is quite difficult. Thank you.
Hello. Okay, it's only for radio. I'm Teresa Turner of the International Oil Working Group, and I've just come back from Abuja, Nigeria, where the Abuja Declaration to stop all oil and gas exploration was passed, and it also called for united action against the oil companies, the big oil companies, in every country of the world, a simultaneous direct action by people's organizations to stop the kind of activity that we've been hearing about, really, in all the different presentations today. And I have a question for Judith Kimmerling and also for Sheila. You've both worked a great deal on global warming and the pollution impacts of the oil companies. And are you aware of any initiative to take the perpetrators of climate change to court and charge them for the damage that they're doing that's particular to a certain area, but it's also universal damage to all life on Earth?
I'm going to defer to Sheila on that because I think she was talking about a case, but so I'll let you speak of that. I'm not personally, I mean, I'm aware of cases, litigation. There is a trend by people from other countries to try to sue U.S. corporations in U.S. courts, but those cases tend to be for human rights violations. There's a lot of them against oil companies. They happen to be recurring defendants, but they tend to be for human rights violations or in a couple cases for environmental damages that do not include climate change claims. But Sheila can speak, I think, about the really cutting edge case on that.
I'm not aware of lawsuits per se, and we decided not to go through a lawsuit because it would just have cost an enormous amount of money and resources to put a lawsuit together. The other thing, though, too, on high moral ground, we wanted it not to become an issue of money. We didn't want to be dismissed and say, oh, they just want money. And besides, you know, some of them are in development themselves. We didn't want it to be that case at all. So we decided that using the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights was the way to go, and that it would be a legal petition, a legal complaint. It's not just signatures here. This is a thick 167-page legal petition that we have launched. And it's groundbreaking, in a sense, in putting this issue as a human rights issue. But I am not aware of lawsuits per se today.
Good afternoon. Within the indigenous groups that you represent or have connections with, what kind of challenges have faced the groups with respect to members within who have different perspectives or different ideas about how their culture is and should be with respect to new influences from that deal with economic globalization? I'm just interested in like how when groups are represented, are they truly representing all the diverse perspectives within the groups? What have been your experiences with that?
Do you want me to start? Okay, and others can of course join in. Well, just from our perspective, the Inuit, we live in four countries, four very different situations for us in terms of our relationship to our governments. We are one people But geographically, our boundaries are divided, not of our doing, of course. But because we are living in four different countries, the economic and political situation is very different for us. And in fact, on this particular issue of climate change, there are some differing views, not in terms of protection of our culture and our way of life, but in terms of development. As we know, there are some of our own people are in development in Alaska and Canada. And so it becomes a real balancing act of trying to get the voices the voices heard of the hunters and the children and the and their future to deal with this issue rather than seeing it as a short-term economic issue. So you'll have differing voices, there's no doubt. And those voices are all out there, but I always say we have to find that balance to ensure that the voices that are not able to come out in political arenas should be heard, and that's the voice of the hunter, and that's the voice of the children and their future, because this generation should not be hijacking the future of the next generation. But you'll have differing voices, and that's the reality. Just like any society, you will have some differing voices. But in the majority of our people, the Inuit, we all want protection, long-term protection of our hunting way of life. We don't differ in that opinion at all.
Bom, nas comunidades indígenas, né, acho que não vi nenhuma que não funciona assim, né, do Brasil. Todas as decisões são tomadas em reuniões de comunidade.
So in our communities in Brazil, I don't know any communities that is not like this, but our decisions are taken in group meetings.
Para discutir todo tipo de assunto e problema da comunidade. Então, são tiradas decisões dentro da comunidade e, no caso, eu sou o cacique, eu respondo pela comunidade. Então, às vezes... Às vezes, claro, que a gente tem que tomar decisões rápidas e importantes e que são acatadas também por todos os membros da comunidade, já que eu lidero a comunidade.
And so these assemblies and meetings are held so that we can talk about all of the issues and problems that face our communities so that we can discuss them thoroughly and make community-based decisions on them. But it's true that, you know, I'm a chief of my community, and sometimes there are times where a decision has to be made quickly. So I have to make that call, and I have to respond to my community for making that decision.
E para finalizar, na comunidade é respeitado todas as opiniões, desde os mais jovens e principalmente dos mais velhos. Então, dificilmente há problema e divergência de interesses.
And so just to finish up, I want to say that everyone is heard and given a voice in the community. The youth, but especially the elders. So if everyone is given a voice, it's very difficult, you know, it's very rare that there's actual disunity or differing opinions.
I've read that when the conquistadors came to the Americas, one of the reasons that they thought that the peoples they were encountering were inferior was because the women had autonomy and more power than European women had. In that context, my question is, how are these environmental assaults impacting on the position of women? We know about the health of women and men, but specifically on the position of women within various societies. And I'm addressing this particularly to Beverly Jacobs of the Canadian Women's Association.
Well, I can tell you that with respect to the issues of the impacts of colonization, one of those is patriarchy and the patriarchal Eurocentric ways of thinking that have impacted our communities and our men. where even where I come from, I come from a matriarchal society. So I'm going to talk specifically about that. And even though we talk about, you know, coming from Haudenosaunee culture and Haudenosaunee values and belief systems, that patriarchy has affected our men. And it is a sad reality. Not all of our men, and there we have a lot of really strong men in our communities who have maintained that. But when we're talking about violence that still exists in our communities and seeing the relationship between, there's supposed to be a balance between our clan mothers and our chiefs and our communities, and you know, the teachings that were taught about who we are as a people and the balance between our men and our women, and right now it's imbalanced. And there's a lot of disrespect towards our women in our communities. And the result of it is violence that's occurring in our communities and lack of respect. And respect because we were taught that our women's, because of our instinct and because of our teachings and who we were and are as women, that we know our families, we know our children, and we know what's best for our communities. And men respected that. And as a result of all of that, you know, all of the impact of colonization, there's disrespect. And so that's part of what we're trying to do, is to reclaim that. And our women are had to go underground for a while. It just seemed like there was a lot of issues that went into the community that was silenced. And those things, some of those things are still silenced. And there's some women who are coming forward and saying that's enough, and saying, you know, we need to reclaim and bring back what we've already been told and taught and part of our spiritual laws and beliefs. And that's what's happening. So thank you.
With the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, it's a birthplace, and women can relate to that as a birthplace. And all birthplaces should be protected to protect all life. And women, we really need women to come forward, women organization, women's club, to come forward and support these things, because we can relate with that. When I had my baby, I wanted a privacy. I want clean place. I want quiet place. And each life needs that. So we need to speak in that term on a lot of issues as a woman. And that's how I related to my issue, because at first, when we first made the position, my elders didn't ask me to go out as a woman. They told me to go out and educate the world. But now that is so critical with the global warming and everything and climate change, I think we do need women's voice, because we do give life and we do have a power. I was taught that women have a power. They have to use it in a good way and respect our men, because they need our power to make them strong. Thank you.
Let me add a couple comments to that question as well. For many of our tribes in the north, it's our opinion that many of our people originally were matrilineal. And when I said earlier in my presentation that we have to redefine our relationship with the sacredness of Mother Earth, what I'm talking about is redefining our relationship with the female creative principle. We're talking about the principles of creation, which is very sacred to our people. And that's understanding what our relationship is as men to our mothers and our sisters, our aunties, our grandmothers. Because in the same way of that respect, if we say that we respect Mother Earth, that we're going to protect the environment, then that also, that process transforms us as men to be able to understand our relationship with our sisters and our mothers and our companions. That's something that part of industrialized societies, I feel in our study, that they have pushed aside that understanding. They have wanted to erase that understanding so that the woman is marginalized. So the same way that we marginalize and give our position, our permission to rape the earth, to gorge into the earth, to not be respectful to the earth. And these are certain principles that are good questions that we have, because that's part of the globalization agenda that follows an industrialization agenda, which removes all people from nature. Once you remove people from nature, then you have no understanding of your relationship to the environment. But what I'm saying is that you have no you have a difficult understanding of your relationship between the role of the man and the role of the woman.
My question is for anyone, really, and it's kind of a personal interest to me to learn about the about your indigenous cultures. My question is kind of, I guess you could say, European ethic is a linear time model and an ethic of progress, and sometimes an aggressive ethic that's tied with religion of proselytization. It's always a forward-moving ethic. I was wondering, what is kind of the future ethic for indigenous peoples? What is the end? Because I heard him just say, you know, reconnection with the sacredness of Earth. That's not an ethic that's I don't think is anywhere found in religious thought, typically in America. But there is an aggressive ethic that's always forward-looking. So what is the indigenous cyclical future ethic look like?
I think I'll try to attempt to answer your question, because what you said kind of contradicted. You were kind of contradictory in your question, I thought, because indigenous peoples were always talking in cycles and circles and we don't ever see an end, because it's continuous. It's a continuous flow. It's a continuous circle of life that we're on. And when we're talking about, let's say we're talking about our traditions, our spiritual values, and our beliefs, and our connections to the earth, we don't see that as any different that would come to our future generations, that's the way of life that we want it to continue. And it's the impact of the outside world that changes that. And so when you talk about, I'm not sure, when you're talking about religion, when we're talking about spiritual beliefs, it's a continuous way of life. There is no end. Because our traditions and our cultures continue, they may change over time, or they may adapt to our way of life today, and our values and our belief systems continue, and that's what we're talking about, and I believe that we have to. That's part just to explain even a prophecy. One of our prophecies is that. We're told that things that are happening to the environment today, we were told that. So we're living in that prophecy today. And that it is going to be our people, indigenous peoples, because we've survived and because we've learned how to survive off of our lands and territories, that others are going to start to learn from us. And that's the prophecy we're at right now. And so... And so when we all come together like this, it just affirms it. So that's my answer.
We also believe that a fire will destroy us, and we believe the fire is life, because we respect the sun, because without sun it'll be no life. So if we respect fire, and which we don't, because now is affecting us through global warming and climate change, because we put too much pollution into the air and causing the sun rays to come in and causing us all this problem. So we're not only talking about things that walks, things that was born, you know, like caribou or fish or anything like that. We believe that everything is our relation. And we believe that it's alive and it got life to it. And we have to have that, gain that respect.